Welcome back to Legally Judgy Podcast. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Alexa.
Hey girl, hey.
What's up, what's up?
What's been going on with you? What's new in the world of Alexa?
I am super into another show.
Okay.
It's a show my wife got me into, Hardcore. You know, like, do you ever have parkour. These shows? Parkour. I'm just, did you say parkour? Reminds me of Michael Scott.
Yep.
Now I'm just Michael Scotting everywhere. Okay, anyway, no. I divert. What's that? I digress. Sorry, thank you. I did divert from the topic. Anyway, okay. So you know those like shows where you're like, this is stupid. Like your partner or friend is watching it and you're like, no way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into this. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly creeps up on you and you're like, fuck, this is a really good show, but I don't want to admit it.
Like Bridgerton?
Yeah. Yes and no. No, not that one. But the Great British Baking Show.
Oh, wow. Oh
my God. I am so into this freaking show. It's ridiculous. My wife is already caught up, right?
But do you even bake?
Not at all, but I eat. It's a talent of mine. But my favorite part are these judges, especially this one judge, Mary. Uh-huh. She's at least 105 years old. And you know when you know when old people have, I don't know if it's like their dentures or what, but they have like a whistle when they talk. Yeah.
Yep.
So she, I'm obsessed with the way that she talks, right? She'll be like,
ew, texture. Ew, stop.
No, I have to Mary impersonate. You do Kardashians all the time.
Do this.
Impersonate Mary? You've never even heard me talk about her.
It's when you impersonate the sounds, my stomach literally turns.
Well, welcome to the Great British Baking Show, okay? So she'll be like, the texture is just great. And there's like this whistle, right? And she'll be like, the soggy bottom. I just love this. Great lemon. Okay, I'm getting a little Sean Connery here. So it's like a mix of Mary and Sean Connery. But anyway, you need to watch this show. Mm. Don't you like sweets?
I don't like food shows because they just make me hungry.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's true. We've may or may not be eating a lot more dessert this week, but it's inspiring. I definitely want to try to bake something now.
Okay.
Which isn't good because I burn everything.
I have a request. Can you do banana pudding first? Is that not your thing?
Do I just mush up bananas? No,
is that what it is? Banana pudding?
Banana. Are you talking about the thing that banana
has like
bread?
The thing that has like vanilla wafers in it. I think that's banana pudding, but now I'm blanking.
Yeah, producers are saying yeah. Okay. I have no idea.
Thanks, producers.
I like strawberry shortcake.
I keep it. Make that.
Something fruity with, make that. Are you going to help me?
No. You said you were going to bake. I'm just offering you suggestions.
But I really can't bake. I was really just fishing for like you to offer to help me.
No, sorry.
Fine then. We're just going to have to buy a strawberry shortcake.
It's also fine.
How's your week?
It was good. As we talked about last week's episode, I did not get to have my huge wedding.
Yeah, my head is still reeling from that one.
Because of the pandemic, it's fine. We still got married. It was great. Best decision I've ever made. But now we obviously want to celebrate. You know, the world's opening back up. People mm-hmm. are fully vaxxed and poked up. And so...
Poked up. Are you trying to make that happen?
Maybe.
I'm like Regina Jordan. Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. Poked up.
Everybody's poked up.
It sounds wrong.
Fine. Don't care. And so we're now planning an anniversary party. And so it's really hard for me to just plan a party and not get like fully down the rabbit hole of a new wedding.
Okay, so were we heading into wedding territory with this?
We have at some points in time, and my uh-huh. husband has reminded me that we're not doing that.
Okay.
That ship has sailed.
So, like, what is a wedding-ish that you would like to have, but you know that you shouldn't?
Definitely an outfit change.
Oh, an outfit change.
But, like, an elaborate outfit change.
Oh, okay. Like a four figures?
Like, I'm ready to spend a couple thousands on my attire. And wow. I think
so we're taking
husband
out
is, like,
taking out a loan for this one.
Excuse you. We're not taking out any loans. We are not broke. But we can also, not use this anniversary party to become broke. So I'm just getting a little stressed out because now I have to do things yeah. within a budget.
Well, if you want me to gift you something, I could do doves. I hear that's popular at weddings. Maybe I could give you something
funerals.
Something outlandish. Okay. Doves? Yeah. White doves?
People let doves go at funerals.
I don't know. I just want strawberry shortcake. So am I going to get an invite? Am I coming to this?
Probably.
I can help you with the outfit change. I can pick one up for you.
Okay, that's fine.
I can go to my local JCPenney.
As long as you carry my coffee and salad to the anniversary party, you're invited.
Yeah, sure, I'll carry it. I mean, I can't guarantee you won't get sick from one after you eat it. I mean, there might be something in it because you'd be a terrible boss. So if I need to poison you.
And you would be a terrible assistant, but I would be a better boss than Ellen DeGeneres.
Arguable.
Is it?
I don't know.
I'm a great person, but let's get into it.
That's what she said too. All right. Ellen DeGeneres.
She did.
All right. So she was born in 1958 in Louisiana. She's now, I don't know if you've really caught on to this, but I think most people know who she is. She's probably one of the most famous comedians here in America, maybe worldwide. I have no idea how much her international presence is, but certainly one of the biggest comedians we have. And she's been a TV host for, what, 19 years? And her famous tagline, which I want us to keep in mind for this episode, is be kind to one another.
That's cute.
Yeah, you would think. I feel like you would love her story, right? It's the it's like the ultimate American dream, I say in quotation marks.
She definitely has the American dream.
The American dream. She worked at JCPenney originally, which I feel like is fantastic because she later became a spokesperson for them. And imagine, I don't know what she did at JCPenney, but I assume she's probably like a cashier or something.
Yeah.
I was a cashier at Kohl's. That was my first job.
So we're going to get you in a Kohl's ad?
Yeah, that's basically now my goal.
Full circle.
Kohl's. I want to sell those pajamas on the Black Friday sale. Okay. She also worked at TGI Fridays. She was a house painter.
How does one even become a house painter? That just feels so random.
I mean, if I wanted to be a house painter, you know what I'd do? I'd go to my local Lowe's or Home Depot, grab a bucket of paint, and knock on someone's door.
And you just walk around the neighborhood, asking if you need a touch-up?
Yeah, maybe I put a couple flyers out of my face, need a painter. Grab a tab, you know, when you grab a tab, like a dog walker or house cleaner.
From like the tree bark paper. Yeah.
It's like stapled, like a staple gun. Love I'm like, it. who has this Love stuff it. Still? Do people still do this?
There have been so many Law & Order SVU episodes actually about those little tear off things.
Oh, is that how you get axe murdered or something?
It's around there.
I respect them.
I'm going to put one on your door.
I think my mom used to do it actually for Mary Kay. And I was like, this is real sus. Mom.
Did Ellen also marry Kay?
Maybe. She probably did. In between, she was also a hostess and a bartender before she got big. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't doubt that she also sold some Mary Kay.
Probably.
My mom and her probably go back.
Okay.
So she's doing all these odd jobs, but her end goal was always to become a stand-up comic. Mm-hmm. So she starts performing in these like small clubs and coffee houses. I think most people start off that way, right? In the early 80s. And then she slowly gets bigger and bigger. She starts performing mainly in the New Orleans area, and she finally lands this emceeing job at a popular comedy club. Mm-hmm. So again, she's just getting bigger, and eventually she gets huge gigs and recognition, starting again like the early mid 80s. So in 84, she's named Showtime's Funniest Person in America. And then in 86, she actually gets to appear on the Johnny Carson show, which I feel like is an amazing stamp of approval for anybody coming up.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, she obviously, I think that gave her the boost that she needed in her career because after she had appeared in several kind of canceled TV shows, she finally gets her big break when she becomes the star in Ellen from 1994 to 1998. And it's, you know, it's a pretty big scripted TV show that was loosely based on her career as a stand-up comedian. And she kind of used observational humor to put together the scenes and, you know, the acts that were in this show.
Right. And one of my fun facts, I feel like I'm going to start saying fun facts instead of favorites because I feel like I have too many favorites.
You did have a lot of favorites.
It dilutes it. So fun fact is season one of this show, it was actually called These Friends of Mine, but they changed it to Ellen so people didn't confuse it with Friends.
I don't think those would have been easily confusable. But
Ellen DeGeneres, Jennifer Aniston.
Close.
Which one's which again?
Twinsies.
Right.
Just like us. Well, so people end up calling her the female Seinfeld, basically as a result of this show. Listen, I never watched it. I truly don't care to, and I didn't care to then.
Not a fan?
I don't know.
You don't like sitcoms, actually. You just told me that.
I'm not a huge sitcom. I don't like the slap-knee humor and the laugh tracks in the background. You can feel that they're very scripted.
Very American. Yeah, that's very American sitcom-y.
And she just, I don't know, I just never really got great vibes about her.
Did you watch Seinfeld?
No. That was just a bit too white for me. That was really the issue. I just feel like you don't live in New York and have no black friends unless you're, you know, the R word. Yeah. So anyways, I thought it was also, it's kind of odd that this one wasn't like syndicated or put on any of the streamers. So I feel like it probably wasn't that great and I was maybe onto something.
Well, probably actually. I did read that it was syndicated, but it was like between the hours of midnight and 3 a.m.
So nobody gave a shit about that show.
On Lifetime, Oxygen.
Oh,
you know,
Lifetime.
It's like those channels. I think she made it up to FX at one point. And then the big thing is I did find this. She actually, her series premiered on Hulu for National Coming Out Day in 2017, but they took it off pretty quickly after that. So Hulu was probably like, how do we get more inclusive? I know, find the lesbian sitcom, put it on for a day, and we're set. We're good. We checked all the boxes.
Wow. Well, that didn't work out well. Well, so Ellen ends up coming out as a lesbian on Oprah's show in 1997, which was a pretty pivotal moment. You know I love Auntie Opes, but it was also just a pivotal moment for culture. From what I understand, this made her the first lesbian lead of her own sitcom. Mm-hmm. And she was featured on the cover of Time with the headline that says, "Yep, I'm gay."
Yeah, so her.
Do you think so?
I just feel like that's so, yep, right? She's so like girl next door. It's so wholesome, even when she's coming out. But I remember it being so scandalous because I remember obviously being 97. I'm 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And certainly around that time, I think in my little baby brain, I knew and I was like, lesbian. Right. And I think my mom watched her sitcom and then was like, oh my God, she's a lesbian.
Did she stop watching it?
Well, I mean, not to blow it for everybody, but it does get canceled soon after that. But I think she did. I think it was just controversial at the time. Yeah,
no, it definitely was. I mean, it definitely shifted her career after she came out. She also simultaneously came out on the show, like on the scripted show as her character. Right. And so kind of to your point, it wasn't really great for the sitcom. People stopped watching for various reasons. You know, there was one side of the spectrum that didn't think she was political enough about coming out. And I guess, you know, being more proud and out loud about it and really showing that this is normal. Like, there's nothing, this is not a thing that we should even really have to reflect on. But then there were also, you know, the straights who were a little bit less forgiving and less understanding and didn't want to watch anymore.
Right. And I read that after her character came out, ABC, the network that this aired on, you know, remember back in the day, they'd put parental advisories at the beginning of each episode?
Yeah.
So they started putting one on just because her character came out.
That's so sad.
Which is hard. Like, it's so different than these days, right? I take for granted me being out now and forgetting how I felt even as a teenager because it wasn't in the media.
Yeah.
So at least I applaud Ellen for like trying. Mm-hmm. And to your point, straights did come at her for being too gay, but also there were other gay people. Elton John said like, stop being so gay.
Right.
And I'm like, just because she has a girlfriend on the show, that's so gay, right? Straight people have they have relationships all the time.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Yeah.
Anyway, like I said, the show gets canceled in May 98, not that much longer after she and her character come out.
Right. And it's not really clear. Well, I couldn't find out much about what she did in the interim. I thought like maybe she was doing some stand-up gigs.
I think so. That's what I read too. And I remember I read an interview where she basically said she was just struggling for money. She would take whatever stand-up show she could. So maybe she was back in the smaller clubs doing whatever she could.
The club. Well, she also does a separate The Ellen Show from 2001 to 2002, which is a different sitcom that also gets canceled, but only after 13 episodes. The character apparently was a lesbian also, but rarely talked about sexuality. So I feel like she used that to try and like get her way back into the sitcom game. And
yeah, it was like Ellen Part Two, just a little less gay.
Yeah.
But do you remember seeing her outfits and her hair back then?
No.
She always looked like a lesbian. I'm sorry. It's like how I tried to be feminine and you're like, no, it's not working, girl. We all know. Just stop. But in 2003 is her big turning point. It's not that much longer after she tried that second sitcom. Mm-hmm. She ends up being the voice of Dory in Finding Nemo, and she lands her gig as the host of the Ellen DeGeneres talk show, the talk show that we all know now.
I love Finding Nemo, by the way.
Love movie. That movie.
Amazing movie.
And that's saying something because you're not a big cartoon person, right?
No, I just love like a good heartwarming story.
It's a good story.
You know, like he lost his dad and it was just so sad.
And his little flipper that didn't flip all the way. a little Finding Nemo fun fact, which I discovered in doing the research for this show. Originally, the filmmakers envisioned Dory as a man. They were going to give it to a male actor.
Okay.
But apparently this guy started watching Ellen, the first sitcom, for whatever reason.
Wonder where he got that. Maybe Blockbuster, since it was back in the day.
Yeah, probably. He's like, I need a lesbian sitcom to get me through. And he watched one of her scenes where Ellen, I guess, changes the subject 5 times in a single sentence. And he was like, that's Dory. And
I wonder if that was on purpose. Like, I wonder if she was doing that intentionally or if that was just how she was thinking at the time. And he was like, okay.
Right. Either way, it worked out. Because then she got Dory, and that was pretty big for her.
Right.
But anyway, back to the talk show.
Well, so it was, I mean, it's been a high energy show, right? I mean, she dances, she gets the audience involved, she gives away prizes and giveaways with sponsors, she's got celebrities. Like, it's definitely like a full...
It's a fun show.
It's a fun talk show.
I went once.
Did you really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, when?
I was saving this one for you. Oh. You can't know everything about me, Nicole.
We're getting there. Offline. But fine.
Yeah, I went back, I don't know, years ago now. Maybe I was in law school.
Okay.
I went with my wife and my brother, and it was really exciting. Hmm. I do remember feeling very awkward dancing, though, because I'm not really into dancing unless I've had a couple shots in the club. So I remember they had these big signs that were like, dance, audience, dance. And I was like, no, I don't want to. And then the producers come before like, dance, dance, high energy.
Oh,
and
I'm
like,
super uncomfortable.
It's my fucking vibe. Yeah. I'm cool. Leave me alone.
I just stand in the corner with my drink, bro.
Yeah. My wife and my brother are like, yes, Alan. Hi, Alan.
That's amazing. Well, so as a result of all of her dancing and making everybody else dance, she has won 64 Daytime Emmy Awards, which is
huge.
Wildly impressive. I'm not even going to lie. Yeah. But in the midst of all the success, some complaints start to roll in about her around 2007. Mm-hmm. And so essentially the writers on her show are saying that she treated them terribly. But this was in connection actually with the original Ellen show. So it feels kind of random.
Okay.
Because suddenly like the sitcom writers are coming out to vocalize complaints as she's now starting her talk show.
So this is like a couple years later.
Right.
Yeah.
But then separately on the Ellen talk show around the same time, she basically, it's kind of like a complicated thing, right? So there's this WGA, the Writers Guild.
Union.
Yeah, it's best a union for writers. Mm-hmm. And so they're protesting certain things back at that, you know, in those dates. And I think it was involved with like work conditions and fees, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so the writers were on strike and were not working at that point in time. But Ellen did what's called crossing the picket line, which essentially means that she goes into work even though her writers are picketing and protesting and not coming in.
Right.
And so she goes in to tape her show and says that she loves her writers and in honor of them, she's not going to do a monologue, but she hopes that they get everything that they're asking for, but wants to show her guests that she still cares, so she still comes in to do the show.
I think that's controversial. Mm-hmm. Us working in the industry, I feel like writers, these things happen every X amount of years, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a host, I mean, me personally, I would feel really uncomfortable crossing the picket lines if my writers were not getting paid what they should be paid. Mm-hmm. And I read that she was worried because guests had already flown in, but I feel like you could cancel that. You could reschedule. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, so here's the thing. I get that, yes, people were flying, and I don't really know. It's not clear to me, like, when the WGA protest started as opposed to, like, when these shows were set to happen. But in my mind, I'm like, you use it to do something else with your guests. If it's, like, 2 days' notice and people aren't able to cancel hotel and airfare and get that money back, then do, like, a cool, like, barbecue or a dinner, or there's still some other way to like engage with your guests.
Hang out with them?
Yeah.
Like not on the show?
Still engage with them. Just don't do a show and disrespect the people that are working for you.
Right. To be like, oh, I respect you because I didn't do the monologue. You didn't do the monologue because they didn't write it for you.
Truly.
Is what I thought.
And so like what, you honor them for 2 minutes by instead giving away money to other people instead of the writers who need more money?
Right.
Fantastic, Ellen.
Right.
But apparently, I mean, clearly her writers felt the same way. They basically end up speaking out and saying they're not surprised she did this given how terribly she treats them. And they thought it was kind of backwards. They were like, she's not standing behind us by doing the show while we can't work and we're not getting paid. Mm-hmm. And then there were also like some other allegations that she would yell at writers for making unfunny jokes. But that was really kind of the extent of the complaints about her for a while.
Okay, so what's going on in her personal life? In 2008, she marries longtime girlfriend Portia de Rossi. Mm-hmm. She's an actress who I think you lovingly call, what, mostly known for Ally McBeal? Yeah. It's what we talked about
her. I mean, I really just know her as Ellen's wife, to be honest with you.
The disrespect. She was have you seen Arrested Development?
No, actually.
You need to
has watched it. I have not watched
Producer Marge is shaking her head
at
you.
She's disappointed.
I think you would like that.
Is the other producer disappointed too? No.
She's disinterested.
different dis word.
Welcome to 60% of our audience. Thanks, Mom, for being the 40%. No, Arrested Development's hilarious. I actually think you would really like her character in that one. And then she had a couple of scenes in Scandal, which you did watch, right?
I did watch that, yes. I remember her being in there.
Do you remember the power lesbian haircut? The one that just like goes all the way back?
She was great. She was actually great in that show.
See? She's more than just a wife.
I mean, listen, I think...
Disrespectful.
What I think that she did is humanize Ellen after her relationship with Anne Heche, because I think that ended kind of abruptly and with some questions, some like very large question marks in the air. Mm-hmm. So I think Portia kind of came in and cleaned up her image. Mm-hmm. But I think as a result of that, Portia's career basically stopped for this, you know, however many years that she's been with Ellen.
Yeah.
I mean, because maybe. Besides what? Like Arrested Development and Scandal, what has she really done?
I mean, I'm sure she's doing other things, just not acting. I don't know. She's just so likable, Nicole.
She is. I like her. I'm just
she's
saying.
She's very charismatic.
Girl, Ellen ruined your life. We'll okay. get back to that later.
Whoa. No, she didn't. She lives in that million, kajillion dollar compound.
I'm not going to call her a prisoner, but, you know.
No, Ellen says she's a prisoner.
I know. We'll get back to that. But I definitely blink twice if you need help.
She's look, if Ellen wants to marry me, she's what, worth half a billion?
Wow, okay.
Sure. I mean, maybe she can give me more.
You were just always proposing like who you're gonna get married to.
Last week it was Bill Gates. This is a step up, girl, okay? Bill Gates or Ellen?
I think Bill Gates is probably better than Ellen.
I don't know.
By the end of the episode, let's revisit this.
Maybe if he stops tucking his polos into his dad jeans, we can talk.
I would still take that over what we're about to get into.
All right. So anyways, Ellen continues finding success in the entertainment industry, right? She stars in The Love Letter, like we said, Finding Nemo. She also does the sequel Finding Dory. She's a judge on American Idol for a season. She's hosted the Academy Awards, the Grammys, the Emmys. She's written 4 books. Mm-hmm. One of them I have from
really?
Years ago.
Okay.
Years and years ago. I think my mom bought it for me. I think she was like, another lesbian. Here
somebody
you
a lesbian that you can maybe look
she,
up to.
Maybe she can provide some guidance because I can't. I didn't know this. She has her own record company.
I know. Random. I don't even know whose music she's... I don't know.
I looked at this guy named Chase. I don't know. He's a little boy. He's little to me. He's probably like 22. Mm. I'm talking like I'm 83. But
okay. A little boy.
A little youngin. A youth. She has a production company. She got the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2016 from our boy.
Yes.
President Obama.
Lovingly. I'm going to start crying now.
She got the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor, which is really prestigious. Yeah. And then in 2018, after 15 years of not performing, she actually releases a stand-up special called Relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that one?
I did not.
I don't think you'd like it.
I'm not an Ellen fan.
Okay.
She's not relatable to me either, so I was like, poor title choice for somebody with millions of dollars, but okay.
It was her trying to be ironic about it because she was talking about how unrelatable she is. It reminded me of Kevin Hart when he came out with his, like, he's had his last few stand-ups. It's almost like once you become too rich, it's just really hard to make comedy.
I don't know. Chris Rock has done lots of specials without coming off as condescending.
Well, definitely there were moments where it came off condescending.
Yeah. Fuck you, Ellen. Anyways,
Jesus.
All of this being said, she made about $87.5 million in 2018.
Yeah.
And she, that year at least, was the 15th highest paid celebrity in the world.
In 1 year.
Crazy. $87 million. Just let that sink in for a second.
But we got to cross those picket lines. Obviously, that was years ago, but come on.
Still.
Okay.
Well, so as we mentioned before, right, there were some claims looming originally back in like the 2007-2008 kind of time frame. And, you know, again, people were saying that she's actually not that nice, and that kind of included to her employees and her guests, and not the people who were in the audience, but like the celebrities as who were guests. And so I personally, you know, I took it upon myself, like the good Samaritan I am, to go through some videos with past interviews. And there were definitely some really cringeworthy moments with her guests.
Yeah.
To name a few. So at one point, Khloe Kardashian comes on the show, and she's wearing this tight dress while she's pregnant. And so Ellen kind of shames her for what she's wearing.
She looked cute, I thought.
She looked great. And I also understand that a lot of pregnant women like tight clothing because it makes them feel more supported. But Kay, Ellen, why don't you Google first? So then Celine Dion, who I love, I think is an icon. Last year, let me just say this really quickly. Last year, she wore this lime green Balenciaga tracksuit, and she had this like so super random. Sharp bob. And I was like, yes, girl, get it.
Oh,
and after
snaps.
That, I was like, Celine, you're it.
What? Celine?
Anyways, yeah. I'm going to send you the picture.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, so Ellen basically talks shit about Celine Dion. About Celine Dion's kids for not cutting their hair. And Celine is, like, not having it. So she, like, completely deads that conversation.
You're fair. Yeah, that's fair. It was a family photo, and her son had long hair.
Yeah.
And she's like, when are you going to cut it?
Mm-hmm.
Is her talking shit.
Why do you care about how long her son's hair is?
Right.
Mind your business, girl. Anyways, so then Mariah Carey, who's also one of my legends, comes on the show. And she tries to make She tries to make Mariah admit that she's pregnant by asking her to drink champagne, knowing that if Mariah says no, that the rumors could be true. Mm-hmm. So, A, I think that's a bit fucked up and insensitive. And B, like, why would you do that to her on national television?
Right.
And so Mariah actually later comes out and says that she was really uncomfortable with that moment because she actually was pregnant at the time, but had a miscarriage a few, like, weeks or months earlier.
Ooh, that one's really
so
bad.
She was like, I just felt like I was in the hot spot. And, like, as a woman-to-woman kind of thing, it was, you know, right. just not cool.
I wonder how much this is definitely, she's tone deaf, but I feel like as a comic, and she uses, like I said, you probably are less familiar with her humor because you don't like her, so you haven't watched her. Mm-hmm. I've watched her stand up. Mm-hmm. It's very observational humor, right? Mm-hmm. It's like things around you, you're playing off things around you. So I feel like she's probably trying to play off the person.
Yeah.
But I feel like unless you're really that close, and you probably, especially like pregnancy or kids' hair, especially being a lesbian, I feel like you should be aware of like what topics, even if you have that understanding between you and that person in private, going in public and doing it probably is going to have a different effect.
My thing is, why don't you use your fucking observational humor and realize when people are uncomfortable? Because as I'm watching these clips, the body language is so off. Like, and I'm like, it is clear that they are not here for this shit. So your observation skills are trash, Ellen.
And more than like an interview. But you know interviewers like Barbara Walters, they're always trying to get to like uncomfortable things and get people to admit. I mean, Mariah Carey, certainly not. Like all this stuff. It's not the same thing, right?
Right.
I get what you're saying. I also, the thing that bugged me, one of the standouts is Sofia Vergara for her accent. Mm-hmm. And she came on a lot. It seemed like they really were friends. Mm-hmm. But there is a segment where this part where she tries to teach her English and she's trying to get her to like
so
enunciate
already, but
right. They said that it was a joke and that they had talked about it before, but I think maybe what you're touching on too is like to the public, when we're still behind, a lot of the public, I'm sure her audience, like we're still a little behind.
Right.
So let's not reinforce these stereotypes that could be very dangerous, especially like people with an accent is a great one, or boys with long hair.
Yeah.
Especially like gender norms, right? Like let's not.
Completely agree. And even though we are not T-Swift fans, you know, yet we did an entire episode on her at one point.
Is that you trying to, is that your olive branch?
That's, yeah, whatever.
We talked about her in a previous 55-minute segment.
Whatever the case, at some point Taylor is on the episode and so Ellen starts asking her about her dating life, but almost in like a slut-shaming kind of way, which we did actually touch on in that episode. She was basically being like, well, look at all the guys that you've dated. Like, is it this one? Is it this one? Is it this one? And I'm like, why? She's just a normal girl who's dating, but sadly has to do it in the public eye. So, like, why would you make it worse for her?
Right. It's toward women. Like,
right.
Just choose, like, the straight white men. Go after them.
Yeah, yeah. Where's Les Moonves?
In another segment, she shames a translator who's there with a child musician. So it's kind of going along with the same stuff, right? The way that they enunciate. Mm-hmm. I think she thinks it's funny, but again, she has privilege. We'll get into this, but there's a certain level of privilege that I think she has that she doesn't check because she's white and she's a lesbian. So she thinks, I'm diverse. I get it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, there are some things that transcend your experience in life. The one that I will say I feel almost the most for was Channing Tatum, who has a very rational fear of dolls.
Okay.
She pulled out a porcelain doll and made him kiss it. It's so terrifying.
Uncomfortable.
So terrifying to me. You should understand how fearful I am of dolls. I don't know why she would do this. I'm so upset by this one.
She also used Diddy's fears. I didn't even have this one in my list, but I definitely remember there was an episode. He's like deathly afraid of clowns, I think, or something crazy. Yeah.
And they have him.
And she has a clown come out while he's on the show and he screams.
My hands are literally sweaty talking about this porcelain doll.
Okay, sorry. Let's move on.
Well,
so another one. She basically bullies Dakota Johnson over a birthday party invite. I guess she was mad that Dakota had a birthday party and Ellen wasn't extended an invitation. There's basically like an online backlash that starts over this, not only because of how she handled it, and since it's, you know, been proven that Dakota did in fact invite her, but also because the next day she was at a football game with George Bush, with W, not the older one. And, you know, he was not the most LGBTQ friendly person ever. So people definitely weren't a fan of Ellen, you know, somebody who's supposed to be for her community, hanging out with W.
I remember when that happened and I remember a lot of people getting upset and her response, she like responded via one of her monologues on the show and I found it actually really annoying. At one point she says it's no different than her being friends with someone who wears fur because she's a vegan. And I'm like, not quite the same. Like,
animal rights are not quite comparable to human rights. But
yeah.
Thanks,
and like in these people who have been in positions of power who actively try to take power away and like rights away from people, not the same thing. Yeah. Again, I feel like it's just, there's these moments where the privilege is just reeking off of her. Yeah. And you know what? Be friends with who you want, but like, talk about it better. Mm-hmm. Maybe say, yeah, I sat next to him at this football game, but we actually had a good conversation. Yeah. Or I'm trying to change his mind. Like, say something more progressive. Mm-hmm. Get a better PR agent.
Ugh, we know somebody. We'll call her up.
Yeah.
Well, so after all these cringeworthy kind of scenarios with her, you know, supposed to be esteemed guest, in 2020, employees of her show start coming forward and saying that she's been horrible to them, and that the rumors that have kind of been floating out in the industry since the whole writer thing back in 2007 are true.
Right.
And so this really starts in March of 2020. This comedian, Kevin Porter, do you know who he is?
No, actually. No? I meant to look him up more before, but I didn't.
Well, so apparently he's some comedian. He starts a Twitter thread and basically asks people to share like the meanest or craziest stories they've heard about Ellen. And so he ends up getting more than 2,900 replies.
Crazy.
And ends up donating, shout out to him for this, he donates $2 for every mean story that somebody had told him about Ellen. Which is like, I mean, at least like make something good out of starting a shitstorm.
I will say I did look at his Twitter feed and he did say he was going to try to figure out which ones had some truth to them. Because of course, I'm sure people were just saying stuff just to say stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, I think he ended up donating $600 at one point. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he donated more after that. But so this kind of, I feel like, starts the shitstorm, for lack of a better word, for Ellen. In April, a former bodyguard of hers, who apparently guarded her at the 2014 Oscars that she hosted, complains about the treatment that he received by her. He said that she was very demeaning. He never said hi to him, or like thank you for anything. He did say that our girl Portia, was very nice.
I told you.
Asked him how he was. I want to remind you this is like the famous Oscars with a selfie, you know, with like Meryl Streep.
Like 50 A-list celebrities.
Yeah, all of them. So in my head,
made an NFT out of that yet?
We should. We should find it. We have to ask Ellen.
Right.
For the copyright.
Never mind.
Let me just shoot her an email. You got to start being a little nicer to her. No, but my point is, you know, sometimes we hear about how celebrities have these, you know, they're called bitch, especially women, right? Mm-hmm. They're bitchy. They don't smile. They're not very friendly. So in my head, I was like, well, I wonder if she was nervous because she was hosting and she's focused.
Fair.
So maybe this could be a one-off experience. But at the same time, it probably goes a long way just to say hi to somebody who's helping you.
I don't think it's that hard to do.
So I don't know.
Well, so basically these current employees end up complaining about the lack of transparency during COVID because, you know, as a reminder, this was obviously around that March 2020 when the comedian starts asking for all these tweets. And so they're basically saying there's no transparency when it comes to when they're getting paid and how the remote work situation is going to work. And a number of them say they just like randomly kind of had these pay cuts come up where they got like even up to 60% of a pay reduction without any kind of, hey, FYI, this is what's happening and this is why.
Right, because we know that production stopped on a lot of shows that we were working on in the entertainment industry. We all hit a pause. So it's like, what are we going to do with our jobs? A lot of people were fearful.
Mm-hmm. But I think the issue here is that, you know, they find out that she's still recording and that she ultimately uses a non-union company to do her remote shows instead of the writers that she had previously been using, which essentially makes it cheaper.
Right.
And so she only keeps four of her core crew members.
So messed up. Yeah, because I remember she started shooting her show during COVID from her house. Mm-hmm. So it was like she said it was like a skeleton crew, but it was like a completely different third party, not even her people.
Right.
And so her people are getting paid, 60% less?
Mm-hmm.
That's messed up. And Warner, the parent company, ends up releasing a statement saying that they could have been better about their communication to the employees and that the non-union crew was a result of them trying to comply with health orders due to COVID and that no one lost their job. That's the way they phrase it. No one lost your job, but they're all getting paid
I checked, the CDC didn't say you could only hire non-union workers, but okay, thanks.
Just the whole handling, and that's from the corporate people, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my head too, I was thinking, do you remember it got announced that same thing happened to the crew for Jimmy Kimmel?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he ended up paying his employees out of his own pocket.
I love him.
At certain points.
Meanwhile, she made $87 million in 2018. But you can't cover a couple hundred thousand for your employees.
Exactly. Good, like, just know. Help them. That's what I'm saying. Just help them out. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're really thinking about them, right?
Well, so she obviously wasn't thinking about them. Kind of unrelated to how she was treating her employees. During the quarantine, she basically tweets out about how being under quarantine in the pandemic is like being in jail, from her massive like, I think Hollywood or Hollywood Hills home. It's definitely worth millions right. of dollars.
Yeah. And I did see, because I was like, did she really say that? So I looked back at her tweet. Apparently the rest of it was, it's mostly because I've been wearing the same clothes for 10 years and everyone in here is gay. But again, this is where I'm like,
does that make it better?
Her privilege, she has so much privilege. I think she's just thinking about the joke and the delivery, right? You have these comics who are just like, oh, this is going to be funny. Mm-hmm. Maybe you tell your friend. That's something right. I would text you, for example.
For sure.
I wouldn't say that out loud if I just made almost $88 million in a year mm-hmm. and I'm using like non-union crew.
To save a couple coins that you're not even paying for.
Right. Like with the rest of it, I get she was trying to joke. But again, it's just like, where is your tact? Like, where is your judgment?
She has none.
No, I can't defend her there. Nope.
Well, so in July of 2020, the train keeps going. BuzzFeed basically runs an article with anonymous complaints from former employees.
Talk about the train. It ran off the cliff here.
It's gone. There's no tracks. Gravity has stopped. So people are claiming that they were first of all, there's a long list of complaints, but just to go through a few of them. Some people complain that they were fired after taking either medical leave or bereavement to attend family funerals.
Right.
And one of the employees who left for medical leave said they checked into a mental health facility for a suicide attempt. Mm. And when they came back to work, they were told their job was eliminated. And four other employees, like plus some medical records, basically corroborated this story.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So that's just one.
That's so sad.
Another woman, she's a black woman, said that she felt like she was the subject of race conversations and quits, essentially, within a couple months. Mm-hmm. She basically said that other people on the team joked about how she and another black woman had box braids. They basically didn't know how to tell them apart because, you know, all black women with box braids look the same.
So bad.
And she was told by another person that they only knew white coworkers' names, so they weren't going to try and, you know, basically memorize their names at all.
Right. So ridiculous. Cool, and then another person got in trouble for making a public GoFundMe to raise money for their medical bills because their job just didn't pay enough and insurance didn't pay mm-hmm. enough. So heaven forbid we start a GoFundMe mm-hmm. to help pay for your, but you know, immediately, I guess, I don't know if it was the production team or who found out from the show, but they shut it down because they said it would make Ellen look bad.
That's crazy.
And then other people told by managers not to speak to Ellen. That was like a thing, apparently, like a culture thing. Don't talk to Ellen and don't make eye contact with her. And if you have to speak to her, make sure you chew gum because she has very sensitive smelling.
Oh my God.
That was a thing. And then they would question when people would get up to go to the bathroom, right? They're just monitoring breaks, it sounds like. These are all alleged, right? We don't know for sure, but these were the list of complaints. And it sounds like in a lot of these cases, it was corroborated by multiple former, and it's, I don't know how many, what the ratio was between current versus former employees, but quite a few people corroborated a lot of this.
Well, so sadly, the last main one is that there were some sexual harassment complaints by some of the top producers in the show. And some of the employees were alleging that they had either made, you know, some like sexually explicit comments, but that they had also touched people and maybe solicited oral sex and were maybe kind of grooming some of the younger employees to do things that, you know, obviously were well outside of the scope of their job. So, I mean, all this is terrible, right? But I think it's all horrible. There's no other way to get around it.
No. And by the top producers, we're talking about like the top three producers. Yeah. And there's allegations against each of them.
Yeah.
So we don't want to get too into the weeds, but I think it's important. Like the three, Kevin Lehman was one. He allegedly targeted younger, newer male employees, groped them, kissed their neck. He would point out bulging crotches in staff meetings, like with multiple people there to get everyone to look.
Gross.
And then right after this came out, he categorically denied everything and said, I'm horrified that some of my attempts at humor may have caused offense.
Humor.
Apparently he said he's just a sarcastic guy.
I think you can be sarcastic without, you know, sexually harassing people, but
again, this is like just this deaf tone, like comedy. I mean, this is not even comedy. Yeah. Like, shut up. You're just making excuses. You're actually making yourself look worse now, I think.
Yeah.
Another one, Ed Glavin. He allegedly targeted women and was very touchy-feely. He had a personal private shower in his office. And apparently he would shower with the shower door open so that if someone came into his office, they would immediately see the shower, mm-hmm. the way it was positioned. And people would walk in frequently with him like showering. And apparently he also had a temper. He would use fear and intimidation to get to people. He would yell, throw chairs. He even had a button, allegedly, on his desk that would automatically close the door, which meant like someone would walk in, he'd hit the button, and then you'd hear yelling.
Which also, like, if you have a button to close your door before you yell, you probably, that means that you're hiding something. Like, you know what you're doing is inappropriate, yeah. So you have to hide it by closing the door.
Honestly, the way this sounds, it's probably, I would rather be yelled at than anything else. I mean, this is just, this is a terrible, terrible culture.
I can handle yelling.
Right.
Also, the last guy, Jonathan Norman, he was accused of grooming young employees, which included kind of taking them out to dinners and concerts and then trying to get them to perform sexual favors, particularly kind of asking for these things from men, which, you know, is kind of interesting considering that he's married to a woman and that he maintains in all public things that he's straight.
Right. Sounds very dicey. Just not good.
Just all, none of it's great.
Very grimy. It's just, it sucks.
Yeah.
It really sucks.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because, you know, in the course of this article, it basically comes out, or at least the employees say, right, like, we don't know if this is true, but they say that there's no process to confidentially file complaints with their HR. And so, and apparently, like, when they even have complaints, senior level people on their team pressure them not to go to HR at all. Right. And to basically, like, just go deal with it.
Right. It sounds like it was just generally this culture of fear, and people, sounds like that these top producers, these three guys that we just talked about in particular, really insulated Ellen. Because I remember I read that multiple people said that Ellen probably didn't know about this stuff, that they were kind of telling everybody what to do or what not to do around Ellen. So I will say we don't know how much Ellen knew about this stuff. It sounds like probably she didn't know about these kinds of details. But were you going to say something?
Yeah, I just feel like, okay, fine. Maybe she didn't know for a certain point of time. But at the end of the day, like, as the leader of your team and the person who runs the show, I do feel like it's your job to be involved and to take responsibility when things happen like this. I mean, you're supposed to be, like, the name and the face behind it all.
No, I actually completely agree with you. And you know what really got me, too, is I was reading an unrelated interview she gave where she said the big reason why she started the Be Kind motto, among other things, because there was some stuff that was legit, but she said that she just doesn't like bad news. She just hates it in her general life.
That's
so she
cute.
Does not watch the news because she doesn't want anything negative.
That's super ignorant.
I just feel like that's such a privilege.
It's so privileged to be able to say, like, I don't want to be bothered with negative things, so I'm not going to take them in.
Right. Where most people's lived experiences are just negative in different capacities, right? As serious as what we're talking about, or it could be a little less serious, but there's still negativity. And I'm like, yeah, if you're a multimillionaire times over. What a privilege. You could just buy your happiness.
Yeah.
I mean, she says she suffers from depression, but this is a little bit different, right? These are real world people with problems. And
people who come trusting you, they come to you trusting that their careers are going to grow and flourish on your show.
Right.
And they leave in quite an opposite state. Like, sure, maybe their resumes are now boosted, but I would imagine emotionally, mentally, physically, all of that, they just, you know, it doesn't seem like those things are aligning.
Completely agree.
Well, so after all these complaints came out in July of 2020 still, Warner officially launches an investigation into the claims in the work environment. And so they begin kind of internal investigations with 36 ex-staffers who complained and said that they had witnessed unfair treatment. But Warner also had, like, their own employee relations group and a third-party firm kind of come in and interview current and former employees about their experiences.
Right. And the producers, for what it's worth, continued to maintain that the allegations weren't true, of course, right? I doubt they're going to want to admit all that stuff. But Warner comes back and says that they actually did find some flaws in the show's daily management and some deficiencies. So, okay, sounds like a little bit more than just that, but
yeah,
call me
sure.
crazy.
Yeah.
Says the issues essentially weren't systemic, right? It wasn't a culture thing. It was limited to just a few instances, a few bad apples. We hear that a lot, right? But they did acknowledge that they do need to do more in terms of diversity and inclusion. So, of course, they promote Steven Twitch Boss, who is the black DJ, to co-executive producer. How nice.
That's great. Feels like easy, low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, and they started an anonymous HR hotline for complaints.
And so, you know, no lawsuit has been brought to this date, at least. But the story does kind of raise some interesting legal issues and things to consider. And I think the biggest one for me is that she had all of her employees signing non-disclosure agreements, which contain some arbitration clauses. And so as a reminder, an NDA, you know, is a non-disclosure agreement that essentially prevents people from speaking on certain things or basically making you keep certain information confidential. And so recently, NDAs have kind of been an issue because they've got what's called forced arbitration clauses, And this has kind of especially come into light with the whole Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. And so these clauses essentially require parties to litigate their claims in confidential arbitration proceedings. And so basically this means the public never knows that A, these proceedings have happened, and B, what the result of these proceedings are. And results as in like what the claims were, what the evidence was, and what the settlement ultimately was. So it's just completely confidential. And so some states have actually started to pass laws restricting or prohibiting these arbitration clauses, especially in connection with like sexual harassment and other employment related claims, which makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And so in 2019 in California, which is, you know, obviously where Ellen's show takes place, the state passed legislation barring employers from making employees sign documents that restricted them from disclosing any information about like wrongful acts in the workplace, whether it was sexual harassment or other kind of unlawful behavior. And so basically, you know, this now means that employees are probably going to be more likely to publicize their claims, which I think makes sense. Like the public has a right to know, whether it's a celebrity or a news host or whatever the case is, if these things are happening.
Right, right.
And here, I mean, in theory, Ellen's employees could be restricted from publicly dealing with their claims. And, you know, Ellen, so that Ellen basically remains shielded. And I think this is probably the case because it's I doubt that most of these NDAs that she had her people signing were after 2019, like after this new legislation had been passed.
Right.
So basically this keeps them from bringing their formal lawsuits that the public would have access to.
Yeah, no, that's a lot. And then we also have anti-retaliation laws, which most states prohibit retaliation against people who file or intend to file workers' claims, right? California certainly is one state that does that. We kind of talked about this on the Robert De Niro episode too. You can't, an employer can't retaliate against you because you've launched a complaint with HR, for example.
Right.
So, and people are always, you know, protected by federal laws through the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But again, like I said, specifically, employers can't retaliate against employees for making claims of discrimination or harassment, resisting sexual advances, asking about salary information. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be, you know, workplace harassment. Right. Like asking about salary is okay.
Yeah.
And so the concern here that people could have had, right, because we're speculating, is that they were fearful to talk to their bosses or HR about any toxic behavior because they didn't want to be fired, which were some stuff that we saw. People were fearful of that. And again, we don't know. We just don't know. We don't know how the complaints were received, if they were received, if people said that they quit. One person actually did claim to have been reprimanded for suggesting in a meeting that they refrain from using the term spirit animal as being too PC. And she ends up quitting a little bit after that because she said the culture was a bad fit.
Yeah.
And this, again, goes back to the whole non-disclosure agreement. We don't know. We're not going to find out because it's going to be held privately. And I do want to note that in California, people can potentially sue for workplace harassment under the California Fair Employment and Housing Act. But it's specific. If a person directs negative, inappropriate, or unwanted conduct at a worker based on certain protected characteristics. So we're talking about like sex, race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, physical or mental disabilities, right? Those kinds of things. So if they're directing some bad behavior because of those things, and that bad behavior is frequent or severe or both.
Yeah.
So like a one-off comment won't rise to violation of this law. So the reality of this though, people are probably feeling uncomfortable and are too scared to speak up and are fearful of bringing these claims and being fired.
And I mean, even if you do, right, there's still the element where it's like you have to do it behind closed doors.
Right.
And so like you never, I imagine there's a big mental part of it where it's like you don't even feel like you get to tell your story.
Right.
I mean, really, you can't tell your story, right? Because you A, have to arbitrate behind the closed doors, but B, like you're still subject to the NDA. So it's not like you can't even go tell your friends and get the, you know, maybe like mental reprieve that you need by just getting it off your chest.
Right.
Also simultaneously, basically, along with this, you know, whole WB or the Warner Brothers investigation, Twitter launches this campaign called hashtag replace Ellen. And nothing really comes of it, obviously, because I mean, I'm sure Warner Brothers wasn't checking that Twitter feed.
No, I don't think they're gonna
replace her. But they completed their investigation in the same month, which feels weird to me. Like, how do you start and finish an investigation this large
in like
in July, but fine. So they complete it in July, and Ellen sends a memo to her staff. And so she's saying that she's glad the issues were brought to her attention and that they're taking steps to correct them. She also said that she wanted to show the show to basically be a place of respect and happiness, which, you know, she apparently tells people on, like, day one, whenever they come into the, you know, the fold. And she claims to take responsibility for what's happened, but also kind of basically blames her producers, saying, in quotes, "I'm also learning that people who work with me and for me are speaking on my behalf and misrepresenting who I am, and that has to stop." So she's not really taking responsibility.
Right. And just a month later, in August, the three senior staffers that we talked about, Ed, Jonathan, and Kevin, they all get fired. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's a conspiracy theory, wondering if they took massive payouts to leave and act like it was their fault. So maybe these allegations. I am some people. You are those people?
I am some people. I believe this is all conspiracy.
And I mean, look, collectively, either one person hasn't responded, but they're all saying they're innocent, right? They're like, this isn't true. Mm-hmm. I think even in one instance, Jonathan was like, "I'm the guy that, you know, is married." Yeah. It's like, "I'm married. This couldn't have happened. I've been happily married for 18 years." Because that's a
defense. Right up there with Ja Rule's tweet.
Right, exactly. So after that, she gives another statement, right? There's statements on statements on statements here. Mm-hmm. She basically says that it was all the producer's fault. Feels a little fishy. Mm. She said, hard to believe she would, you know, for us, it's like, how did you not know?
Right.
Again, maybe some specific instances of stuff. You weren't in the office when he was throwing chairs. But how do you not know that people are not happy?
How do you, okay, so if the rules were that you cannot make eye contact with her and you can't speak with her and that you have to chew gum before you ever talk to her, she didn't notice people not looking her in the eye. Like, it just feels like if you guys are all on set all the time, it wasn't weird to you when people would, like, look down at the ground abruptly as soon as right. you like turn the corner. Like,
right.
You didn't notice you were miserable and not going to the bathroom and it just
having UTIs all the time.
Like, she would go to the bathroom and be the only person there. That just didn't feel weird every single day.
Right. And so basically she just apologized again, says she's going to make her workplace be a place where everyone would be treated with respect and that she'll have more oversight over the staff. Mm. So where are we at? Where are we at now?
Well, so in September, she comes back to a new season, and she opens with apologizing for the allegations and says she's taking responsibility for what happened on the show.
Same stuff.
Yeah.
Over and over.
What did she say this time? Please tell me. Should we run like a red line against statement one and two?
Wow, that's a real lawyer move, a red line.
Okay,
So she says, "I learned that things happened here that never should have happened. I know that I'm in a position of privilege and power, and I realize that with that comes responsibility, and I take responsibility for what happens at my show." But then she basically goes on to say that she kind of shot herself in the foot for her motto being "be kind," mm-hmm. because it doesn't give her much wiggle room to like learn and grow.
Do you need wiggle room for "be kind"?
But she promises essentially that she is who she appears to be on her show.
Okay.
I don't know. It's kind of like when someone says, "trust me," I'm like, "oh, that makes me not trust you. You shouldn't have to tell me to trust you."
Yeah.
I either trust you or I don't.
I also just didn't love, it seemed like she kind of manipulated the moment and used COVID to kind of overshadow what's happening. Listen, obviously COVID is massive. It's huge. It's impacted the entire globe, but she very quickly deflected from this like accountability situation to talking about how much the pandemic has affected people.
Yeah.
Which it has, but also like everybody's actually looking at you right now to talk about what's happening in your own fucking set.
Yeah. I don't know. It was her first opening, so maybe she felt like she can talk about it, but I get it. Like, it's just, she needs somebody who's more tapped in to like the common folk, for lack of a better term, right? Because then she goes on to make jokes about some of the complaints that she got. So she made a joke about chewing gum. I think it was geared at Twitch, her DJ, to be like, "oh, make sure you have gum before you talk to me. Hey, hey, hey." You know, so it's just like time and place, right? Not yet, too soon.
Imagine making jokes about like such serious allegations that have been happening in your workplace for years.
I mean, that's the thing. She's picking and choosing which allegations to make jokes about. Like, sure, we can all laugh about, you know, bad breath, but mm-hmm. when your top three producers have
right.
sexual harassment allegations thrown at them, mm-hmm. probably not a very sensitive look to have.
Well, it's also conveniently timed because around this like speech, she gives new perks to her staff, which includes like more paid time off, a better medical leave policy. She adds an HR person from Warner so that there's no conflict with like her show's leadership and people remain anonymous. And in my mind, she's just buying their silence. They probably got raises, mm-hmm. too, that we don't know about that are subject to some NDA.
Right.
So it's just all a little fishy to me.
I don't doubt it. And then in October the next month, celebrities start to speak out against her. So we have the star from Everybody Loves Raymond, Brad Garrett. He says that her mistreatment of people was a well-known and common thing. Mm-hmm. Don't know if that's true, but he said it, and he's pretty big. An actress from Back to the Future, Leah Thompson, says the same, essentially, that she's not as nice as everyone thinks she is.
Right. But then there are all the celebrities who she's probably paid out, like Scooter Braun. Shout out to the Taylor episode. He's clearly a piece of junk, maybe. I don't really know. Debatable.
Oh, how pro-Taylor of you.
No, let's not do that. Don't take it too far. But so, you know, Scooter stands behind her. Katy Perry does. Kevin Hart does. Shocking. Portia, her wife, does.
This is one of my favorites. Portia, stand with Alan.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And so they all say it's not true and refer to, like, the charity that she's done and the things she does for other people, which just gives me very, like...
Well, of course, it's like all these A plus list celebrities. She's gonna be nice to you guys. Mm-hmm. Of course, she's gonna be nice to you. Imagine if Meryl Streep tweeted, "She's a bitch." Like, right. No, you're not gonna be mean to Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
And then also my one thing too with the charities, I'm like, her charities are limited to like animal welfare for the most part, which I give it to you. Animals we need to care for too. But it's almost like there's so many humans suffering mm-hmm. that when I get automatically, it's like sus to me when somebody, all their charities and all their good stuff is for animals. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do you not know about like, I don't know, child hunger.
Yeah.
Race relations.
Right.
I don't know, like trans youth being homeless. Mm-hmm. Like there are other pertinent issues. Yeah. Like I'm really sorry that the gorillas in Africa don't have viable like habitats. I really am.
It's sad, but like, but yeah.
You get what I mean? I mean, PETA's going to come after me for sure after I made that comment, but like, yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so
speaking of gorillas,
yeah, because she's so into animals and cares about them more than humans, apparently, so she ends up signing a multi-year deal with Discovery to do natural history content. And it's, you know, probably works out because she probably doesn't have to work with too many people on that one. She can just talk to her animals and be a bitch to them. But she's just going to narrate and be an executive producer.
Probably which be really nice.
Basically means nothing.
Yeah, and then in 2019, going back in time, but she had signed a multi-project deal with Warner Media, so she's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
She's still Warner's golden child. She has, like, multiple shows that are apparently going to come out on HBO Max at some point.
For sure. Well, so basically, as of these past couple months, I think it was actually in April, mm-hmm. She ends up losing over 1 million viewers. And so apparently the season opened really strong and had the highest viewers ever. I personally think that it's because people just wanted to hear the apology.
Oh, totally.
Like they had completely come back to just be like, what's she going to say? We've been hearing about this for months.
Right.
But then basically right after that first episode, it drops. And so she ends up going from 2.6 million viewers to an average of 1.5 million per episode, which is a massive decline.
That's a huge drop. Yeah.
And so it ends up taking her out of the high tier talk shows with like the Dr. Phil's and the Kelly and Ryan Seacrest of the world.
Right. And it also brought in less ad revenue. So she dropped 20% mm-hmm. from 131 million to 105 million.
Which is like still a lot of ad revenue, but it's also $20 million is a big drop. So, you know.
Yeah, 25. I mean, yeah, because the company's going to look and see what's going on. It's right. A trend.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to continue to go down.
For sure. And she was also having a really hard time getting A-list celebrities to come on the show. So, I mean, this was really impacting like every kind of facet of her show.
But Warner's saying that it was the pandemic. Nicole, come on. Yeah. Silly.
I mean, that's bullshit to me. I feel like she's in LA. A lot of the celebrities live in LA. They can get COVID tested. I think they just didn't want to touch this shit with a 10-foot pole because they were like, we don't know what's happening here. Like, right. I'm not going to get my reputation mixed up in your bullshit, my
Is
friend.
Is this the Titanic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, girl. Yeah. Go sit on that
iceberg
alone.
I'm getting on that
alone.
Little raft.
Yeah. I'm out. I will pedal myself away. I mean, listen, oddly enough, back in early 2021, is that how you say that?
I don't know. That's so formal for you to report on something that you're about to go on.
It is, but I just feel like I need to drop this note.
In the year
note.
Of our Lord, 2000 and...
I just feel like I wanted to drop this note. So when Alexa and I had actually talked about these things kind of earlier in the year, I fully was like, if she doesn't get canceled, I bet you she's going to say that she's going to stop and just like quit the show.
Yeah.
And?
She quit the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're a psychic.
I mean, I just think she was just laying the groundwork for this. I mean, she kind of started off the year saying that, like, Portia wanted her to stop her talk show days and that she had other things that she could be working on. And,
right.
You know, the contract was going to end the next year anyways, so.
They maintain that her creativity was just a little stunted. Okay, Nicole?
Well, okay. So last week, basically, mm-hmm. she announces that she's ending her show in 2022 with, like, whatever season that is.
19. No, it's 19, I think, because they wanted her to go to 20.
Yeah, 19 or 20. I think that's right. Okay. Yeah. And so she does this Hollywood Reporter article, which, like, you know, they obviously outline the quit, but she also does this interview simultaneously. And so she's saying that the show isn't a challenge anymore. But also, like,
I'm going to say that her contract was supposed to expire in 2022. So she's really honing in on that, right?
I mean, yeah, probably it wasn't a challenge anymore in the sense that she couldn't fulfill the challenge of being nice to her fucking employees and guests. So
you're done with
by her. Not a challenge. If you mean too challenging for you to be kind, then sure. Yeah, I can see that for you.
She did say it has nothing to do with the allegations, though. Mm-hmm. She said if it was because of that, she wouldn't have come back for this season. Mm-hmm. But that's also in her contract. Mm-hmm. She had to come back for this season. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if Warner would sue her. They have all these other shows together, but...
Hopefully she's subject to the same NDA that she makes her employees sign.
Right. I will say, if it's not this, it's very convenient timing. Like, the universe was looking out for her on this one. Like, saved her from herself, really. Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, she goes on to say that she'll miss her staff, who are, like, family, side eye. Also, prayers to her family if she's treating them the same.
I guess you're right. Portia do blink twice if you need us.
See, I told you. In a super relatable way, because just like her Netflix series, she's, you know, just like the people.
Relatable.
She says she'll probably take some rest, but because she's literally, quote, like a Ferrari in neutral, she constantly needs to be going.
Vroom, vroom.
Okay.
You didn't like that?
No. And then, you know, here's my issue. Don't my girl, Auntie Oprah, into your bullshit.
They've been BFFs, though. Well, she wants to be BFFs with
She
Oprah.
Wants to. She's not an Oprah status.
Well, once Oprah's talk show went down, I feel like Ellen got to take the scene, right? The daytime talk show host.
She did. But the thing is, here, Oprah has been on the scene for so many years. And there's never been an inkling, a whisper, or anything mm-hmm. that Oprah is the same kind of person that Ellen is.
No.
And so I feel like... I don't know. There's smoke, there's fire. And so this is probably true. And I feel like don't bring my girl Oprah into it. Leave her out here to save the people.
She actually did bring Oprah into it the first time she came out in 97. Because I read, because I never watched her Ellen sitcom, but apparently Oprah played the therapist in the sitcom who Ellen comes out to.
Right.
And then Oprah talked about how she got a lot of hate in real life mm-hmm. for even helping Ellen. So Oprah's just taking hits on behalf of Ellen.
Well, here she goes again.
Maybe she needs to get out. Skedaddle.
Get rid of her. Skedaddle, I hate you. So this, I mean, you know, recently, basically. Okay. So Ellen does interviews basically with Oprah in the Today Show. And she's saying that she had, that she had no idea that there was a toxic work environment until she saw it in the press. Because, you know, but I thought you weren't watching the news, Ellen. I thought you didn't like the negativity, you bitch. And so anyways, she says it was all orchestrated and that people picked on her, but that all the guests were super happy when they came.
That is the problem, right? She literally, you're not joking, she literally said, I felt picked on. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she did say, she's like, I'm not thick-skinned. I know that people say you have to have thick skin to be in this industry. I'm thin-skinned. So I'm just like, it's that whiny violin. I'm getting Taylor vibes. That white woman playing that violin vibe, right? Where I'm like...
Alexa's also moving her fingers like a mini violin. I wish people could see this.
I'm doing the mini violin with like a thread from my t-shirt that won't like get off my finger. But no, this is the problem, I think, where people, when they feel like they check one of the diversity boxes, mm-hmm. that they know what it's like to suffer. And she certainly did at the outset for coming out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then you transcend that point when mm-hmm. you become accepted and class takes mm-hmm. over, and she's now so rich that I feel like she got out of touch.
Yeah.
Because there was a time where I really did like her.
For sure.
And I thought that she seemed to be a good person. I mean, mm-hmm. as much as we can find out about any celebrity. Mm-hmm. But this whole like, I didn't know and I'm so sorry. Even if you feel that way, don't say it in public. It's like the jail prison tweet. Like, just don't say that stuff out loud.
Well, she also kind of goes on to say, which was even more offensive to me, that she wished somebody would have pulled her aside and told her. Like, what did you want the employees to do? Come aside. Just be like, hey, Ellen, somebody told me never to look you in the eyes and to always chew gum when I talk to you. Is that right? As their eyes are closed and they're chewing gum.
I mean, that's a definition of a hostile work environment, right? That you're going to go to the boss and be like, I feel this is a hostile work environment. Are you going to help me? Like, you probably think she's going to bite your head off if that's what you've been told, regardless of if it's true. Mm-hmm. It should be on you to go and check with people.
Right.
Like, how nice would it be on a Monday morning if Ellen just popped up and was like, donuts?
Yeah.
Like, you could do your little staff meeting. You could just do that every
now and then.
You don't
even have to pick them up. Just have your assistant bring the box to your office and then you just walk them around.
I mean, yeah, that was just, I mean, I don't even want to bring you donuts and I don't have a staff, so I'm going to DoorDash that. She also goes on to say that she thinks misogyny probably played a role in all of this.
How does that work?
I don't know, because a lot of men have been taken down by the Me Too movement, among other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no, you're just kind of a douchebag woman. Like that
happens.
Yeah, that goes against men and women. Mm-hmm. Like, women can be douchebags too.
Yeah.
It's not just you.
Well, so all of this being said, like Alexa said, she'll basically remain a part of the Warner Brothers family because she's got her other unscripted like game shows, etc., which I think kind of sucks that they're going to continue to work with somebody who's even accused of this. Like, I would like for the Seth Rogen of Warner Brothers to come forward, because Seth this week came out and said that, like,
finally,
he would never work with James Franco again. And he was like, I don't tolerate that. He was like, I don't know if it's true, but if people are saying that, I'm not going to work with you.
It did take some time, though, because James Franco's allegation, or the allegations against James Franco, have been going on for a couple years now, I want to say.
And Ellen's have been going on since 2007. So Warner Brothers, WTF.
Right.
Somebody needs to get a backbone.
Maybe they think because she herself wasn't the one doing all the sexual misconduct. But turning a blind eye, is that any better?
It's even worse, yeah. Well, yeah.
All right. Producers, where are they at? They got fired. We don't know where they've been, actually. I haven't seen anything. I think that their Twitter handles are the same. Like, some of them still, like claim Ellen.
They're at home the Ellen millions. Show. They're not worried about this.
They're done, though. Yeah. They're done. All right, so you got some advice after all this one? Because this one was like a little heavier than what we're used to.
I feel like if your motto is be kind, maybe actually do that. And to take it just a step further, maybe hire people who are also kind.
I need to think on that one. That's really profound.
Deep, what's yours?
Mine's not deep, shocker, because I'm superficial, AF. I was going to say, if you're worth millions in a pandemic, don't call your multi-million dollar house a jail.
Yeah, that's the start.
Just maybe hire like a person of color to be around you.
That's not the answer. Just hire a person of color to be around you.
To educate you. Like, pay them, though.
Or just educate your fucking self,
Ellen. She's not going to.
Fine, fair. We know that she doesn't watch the news.
For her.
Okay, fine.
Exactly. So if she wants to pay me to get her up on race relations for $87.5 million.
You're in.
I'm in. You got to pay me for my work, okay? That's why I said I'm not going to do it for free.
You can pay her in tequila.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll sign for that. Screw the $87.5 million. Give me a good bottle of Espolòn. Hire us.
Wow.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning into today's episode of Legally Judgy. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talk as much as we love the sound of our own voices.
If you did, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, feel free to connect with us on our socials at Legally Judgy. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye, Ellen.